had been better at some point in their lives. Sam felt understandably drugged as she sat up on the couch. Her legs moved stiffly. Her head pounded. Her eyes would not focus. She stared at Charlie's giant television that took up most of the wall. The shadow of her reflection stared back. Rusty was dead. Sam had always assumed she would get the news while she was in a meeting, or when she landed in a different city, in a different world. She had assumed his death would elicit a sense of sadness, but a temporary one, the same way she had felt when Charlie had told her Peter Alexander, her old high school boyfriend, had been killed by a car. Sam had not thought that she would find Rusty herself, that she would be the one required to deliver the news to her sister, that she would find herself so paralyzed by grief that she sat on the bench beside Rusty for half an hour before she could alert the hospital staff. She had cried for the father she had lost. She had cried for the father she had never known. Sam found her glasses on the coffee table. She stretched her legs, starting with her ankles, moving into her calves, then her quads. Her back arched. She pushed her hands out in front of her, raised her arms over her head. When she was ready, she stood up. She performed more stretches until her muscles warmed and her limbs moved with only a modicum of discomfort. There was no rug on the hardwood floor. Sam doubted Charlie had a yoga mat. She sat cross-legged beside the couch. She stared out at the backyard. The sliding door was cracked open to let in the morning breeze. The rabbit hutch, Charlie's long-ago brownie project, was still standing. Sam had been too overwhelmed with grief to comment on it last night, but she was glad to see that Charlie and Ben had built their home on the old lot where the red brick house had been. Not that Ben had stayed here last night. He'd gone upstairs for only a few minutes. Sam had heard the floorboard squeak as he walked into Charlie's room. There was no screaming. There was no crying. Ben had sneaked down the stairs and left the house without telling Sam goodbye. Sam straightened her spine. She rested the backs of her hands on her knees. Before she could close her eyes, she spotted Charlie pushing a wheelbarrow through the yard. Sam watched her sister spread hay in the rabbit hutch while stray cats mewed at her feet. Bags of food were in the wheelbarrow. Kibble, birdseed, peanuts. Judging by the way Sam's eyes were watering, a dog had at some point lived in the house. So this was how Charlie spent her time, feeding a menagerie. Sam tried to push her sister's problems from her conscience. She was not here to fix Charlie. And, even if she was, there was no way that Charlie would let her. She closed her eyes. She pinched together her fingers. She considered the broken parts of her mind. The delicate folds of gray matter. The electrical current of synapses. Rusty slumped in his wheelchair. Sam could not clear her mind of the image. The way the left corner of his mouth had curved down. The total absence of his spirit, his spark, that had always been there. The sadness she had felt when Sam had realized that he was gone. The need for comfort. The need for Charlie. Sam did not have her sister's phone number. She was too ashamed to admit this to the hospital staff. Instead, she had emailed Ben, then waited for him to email back. Again, the task of delivering bad news to Charlie had fallen on his shoulders. Her sister had not driven to the hospital, as Sam had expected. Charlie had sent Ben to pick up Sam. She had not come down the stairs when Sam arrived at her home. Sam might as well have been a stranger, though Charlie would never be so rude to someone who was not family. "Are you having a stroke?" Charlie stood in the open doorway. Her eyes were swollen from crying. The bruises under her eyes had gone completely black. Sam said, "I was trying to meditate." "I tried that once. Irritated the shit out of me." She pushed off her boots. Hay was in her hair. She smelled of cat. Sam recognized the logo on her T-shirt from Math Club, the symbol pi with a snake curling around it. The Pikeville pythons. Sam adjusted her glasses. They had not been right since the judge had handled them in the courtroom. She stood up with less difficulty than she expected. She told Charlie, "A possum stared at me through the door all night." "That's Bill." Charlie turned on the giant television. "He's my lover." Sam leaned against the arm of the couch. This was exactly the kind of shocking thing Charlie used to say when she was 10. Possums can transmit leptospirosis, E. coli, salmonella. Their scat can carry a bacteria that causes flesh-eating ulcers. "We're not into that kinky stuff." Charlie flipped through the channels. Sam said, "That's quite a television. Ben calls her Eleanor Roosevelt because she's big and ugly, but we still adore her." Charlie found CNN. She muted the sound. Caption scrolled up. Sam saw her eyes quickly scan the words. "Why are you watching that?"
"I want to see if there are any stories about Dad."
Sam watched Charlie watch the news. There was nothing they could tell her sister that Sam could not provide. Without doubt, she knew more than the reporters. What their father had said. What he was likely thinking. That the police had been called. That Rusty's body had been left in the chair for over an hour. Because he had been stabbed. Because his injuries had likely contributed to his death. The Bridge Gap Police Department had been called. Fortunately, Sam had managed to remove her Kelly Wilson list from her father's robe pocket before the police had arrived. Otherwise, the girl's secrets would have been at Ken Coyne's fingertips. "Shit," Charlie unmuted the sound. A voiceover was saying, "Exclusive interview with Adam Humphrey, a former student who attended Pikeville High School with Kelly Renee Wilson." Sam watched a plump, pimply young man standing in front of a beat-up old Camaro. His arms were crossed. He was dressed as if for church, a white button-up shirt, skinny black tie, and black pants. A smattering of hair suggested a goatee on his chin. His glasses had visible fingerprints. Adam said,
"Kelly was all right, I guess. There were things people said about her that weren't nice, but she was okay. She was slow, all right. Up here."
He tapped the side of his head.
"But that's okay, you know. Not everybody can be on the honor roll or whatever. She was just a nice girl. Not real bright, but she tried."
The reporter came into the shot, microphone under his chin. "Can you tell me how you met her?"
"Ain't no telling. Maybe going back to elementary? Most of us know each other. This is a real small town, like you can't walk down the street without seeing people you know."
"Were you friends with Kelly Renee Wilson in middle school?" The reporter had the look of an animal that had smelled fresh meat. "There have been rumors about indiscretions during that time. I wondered if you..."
"Nah, man, I ain't gonna get into that."
He tightened his crossed arms.
"See, people are wanting to say bad things, like she was bullied or whatever, and maybe there were some people who were mean to her, but that's life. Life in school, at least. Kelly knows that. She knew it back then, too. She's not stupid. People are saying she's stupid. Okay, she's not bright. I already said that, but she's not an idiot. It's just how things are when you're a kid. Kids are mean. Sometimes they get mean and stay mean, and sometimes it stops when they graduate, but you roll with it. Kelly rolled with it. So I don't know what set her off, but it ain't that. Not what you're saying. That's a falsehood."
The reporter said, "But with Kelly Renee Wilson, did you..."
"Don't be trying to John Wayne Gacy her, okay? It's just Kelly, Kelly Wilson. And what she did was a hateful thing. I don't know why she did it. I can't speculate or nothing. Nobody can, and nobody should. And if they try to, then they're a bunch of liars. What happened is just what happened. And nobody but Kelly knows why. But you people on the TV, y'all gotta remember, it's just Kelly. Folks that went to school with her, too. It's just Kelly."
Adam Humphrey walked off. The reporter did not let the absence of an interview subject slow him down. He told the anchor back in the studio,
Ron, as I said before, the typical profile of a shooter is male, a loner, generally bullied, isolated, and with an axe to grind. With Kelly Renee Wilson, we are presented with a different possibility, that of a young girl who was ostracized for her sexual promiscuity, who, according to sources close to the Wilson family, terminated an unplanned pregnancy, which, in a small town, Charlie muted the set. Unplanned pregnancy. She was in middle school. It's not like she kept a fucking fertility calendar. Sam said, Adam Humphrey would be a good character witness. He clearly didn't want to denigrate her like some of her other friends have. Friends don't denigrate you, Charlie said. I bet you could get Mindy Zawada on TV and she'd talk about love and forgiveness, but you read the shit she's posting on Facebook and you'd think she was 2 seconds away from grabbing a pitchfork and a burning torch and heading to the jail to pull some kind of Frankenstein shit. People understandably feel that she's a monster. She murdered. I know who she murdered. Charlie looked down at her hands as if she still expected to find Lucy's blood on them. That Humphrey kid better get a good lawyer. This femme fatale angle is going to catch on quick. They're going to hogtie him to Kelly whether he had anything to do with her or not. Sam refrained from commenting. She felt guilty for unburdening herself to Lenore at the diner last night when she would not break privilege for her own sister. However, unlike Lenore, Charlie would definitely be called to the witness stand. Sam did not want to put her sister in the position of having to choose between perjuring herself or providing evidence that might cause a jury to vote for execution. This was one of the many reasons Sam did not practice criminal law. She did not want to have her words lead to the literal difference between life and death. Sam changed the subject, asking Charlie, "What now?" "I assume we have to make arrangements for Dad." He already took care of that. He pre-funded everything, told the funeral director how he wants it to go. He could do all that, but couldn't draw up a will or a DNR. Rusty always wanted to make a good exit. Charlie looked at the clock on the wall. The service starts in 3 hours. Sam felt sucker-punched by the news. She had assumed she would be looking for a hotel today. Why so quickly? He didn't want to be embalmed. He said it was beneath his dignity. Surely one day wouldn't matter. He wanted it to be fast so that you didn't feel like you had to come, or for you to feel guilty because you couldn't make it. Charlie turned off the television. It's not like him to let something drag out. Unless it was one of his stupid stories. Charlie shrugged rather than making a pithy comment. Sam followed her into the kitchen. She sat down at the counter. She watched Charlie tidy the counters and load the dishwasher. She said, "I don't think he suffered." Charlie took 2 mugs down from the cabinet. She poured coffee into one, she added tap water to the other, and put it in the microwave. "You can leave after the funeral. Or before. I don't think it matters. Dad won't know, and you don't care what people here think." Sam ignored the pointed remark. "Ben was very kind to me before he left last night." "Where's your tea?" Charlie retrieved Sam's purse from the bench by the door. "It's in here, right?" "Side pocket." She found the Ziploc in Sam's purse and slid it across the counter. "Can we acknowledge that Ben's not living here without actually having to have a conversation about it?"
"I think we've been doing that for a while."
Sam pulled out a tea sachet. She tossed it to Charlie. "Do you have milk?" "Why would I have milk?" Sam shrugged and shook her head at the same time.
"I didn't forget that you're lactose intolerant. I thought maybe Ben..."
She saw the futility in a drawn-out explanation. "Let's try to get through the day without arguing again, or continuing the argument from yesterday, or whatever it is we're doing." The microwave beeped. Charlie found a potholder. She put the mug on the counter. She pulled a saucer from the cabinet. Sam studied the back of her shirt. Charlie had put her math club handle in iron-on letters on the back of her shirt. Lowest common denominator. Sam asked, "What's going to happen to Kelly Wilson? Will that alcoholic Grail get the case?" Charlie turned around. She placed the mug in front of Sam. The saucer was on top for unknown reasons. "There's a guy in Atlanta, Steve LaScala. I think I can get him to take over.
He might call you for your impressions.
I'll leave you my number.
Ben has it.
Sam put the saucer on the bottom. She dipped the tea bag in and out of the water.
If this La Scala won't do it pro bono, then I'll pay him.
Charlie snorted.
That's going to be over $1 million.
Sam shrugged. It's what Dad would want me to do.
Since when do you do what Dad wants you to do?
Sam felt their temporary peace start to tear at the margins. Dad loved you. It was one of the last things he talked about.
Don't start that.
He was worried about you.
I'm sick of people being worried about me.
On behalf of people, we're sick of it too. Sam looked up from the mug.
Charlie, whatever is bothering you, it's not worth it. This anger you have, this sadness. My father is dead. My husband left me. The last few days have been the shittiest days I've had since you were shot and Mama died. I'm sorry I'm not happy and peppy for you, Sam, but my give-a-fuck is broken.
Charlie drank her coffee. She looked out the kitchen window. Birds had flocked to the feeder. This was the time, perhaps the last opportunity, for Sam to tell her sister about Anton. She wanted Charlie to know that she understood what it meant to be loved, and what a crushing responsibility that love could sometimes be. They could trade secrets the way they had when they were little.
I'll tell you about that boy I have a crush on, if you tell me why Gamma put you on restriction for 3 days.
Sam said, Rusty told me that the letters from Zachariah Culpepper were nothing. The police know about them. He's just desperate. He's trying to get a rise out of us. Don't let him win.
I think you forfeit your participation trophy when you're on death row.
Charlie put down her coffee. She crossed her arms.
Go ahead. What else did he say?
He talked to me about the death penalty.
Did he make you put your fingers on his wrist?
Sam felt hoodwinked yet again. How did he never get run out of town for selling fake band instruments?
He didn't want me to go to Culpepper's execution, if the state ever gets around to doing its job.
Charlie shook her head, as if the death of a man was a mild inconvenience.
I'm not sure if I want to go. But nothing Rusty said, is going to influence my decision.
Sam hoped that was not true. He told me about a photo of Mama.
The photo?
A different one, one he says that neither of us has seen.
I find that hard to believe, Charlie said. We used to go through all of his stuff. He had no privacy.
Sam shrugged. He said it was in his office at home. I'd like to get it before I leave. Ben can take you by the HP after the funeral. The farmhouse. Sam did not want to go, but she would not leave town without having at least one piece of her mother to take back to New York. I can help you cover that. Sam indicated the bruises on Charlie's face. For the funeral.
Why would I want to cover it?
Sam could not think of a good reason. No one would likely be at the funeral. At least, no one Sam wanted to see. Rusty had hardly been a popular figure in town. Sam would make an appearance. Then she would go to the farmhouse. Then she would wait for Stanislav to drive up from Atlanta and leave this place as fast as she could. That was, if she could manage to find the energy to stand. The muscle relaxer was still in her system. She could feel the drug weighing her down. Sam had been awake less than 15 minutes, and she could have just as easily gone back to sleep. She picked up the mug of tea.
Don't drink that.
Charlie's cheeks were flush.
It's got boob sweat.
It's got
boob sweat, Charlie said. I ran the teabag under my bra when you weren't looking.
Sam put down the mug. She should have been irritated, but she laughed. Why would you do that?
Don't expect me to explain myself, Charlie said. I don't know why I'm acting like a kid again, pestering you, trying to annoy you, trying to get your attention. I see myself doing it, and I fucking hate it.
Then stop. She groaned out a heavy sigh.
I don't want to fight, Sam. Dad wouldn't want that, especially not today.
Actually, Dad loved arguments. Not the hurtful kind, Sam drank some tea. She needed the caffeine too much to care what was in it.
So what now?
I guess I'm going to go cry in the shower and then get ready for my father's hastily arranged funeral. Charlie rinsed her coffee mug in the sink. She loaded it into the dishwasher. She wiped her hands on a towel. She started to leave.
My husband died.
Sam had pushed out the words so fast that she wasn't sure Charlie had heard them. His name was Anton. We were married for 12 years. Charlie's lips parted in surprise. He died 13 months ago. Esophageal cancer. Charlie's mouth moved as she tried to think what to say. She settled on,
I'm sorry.
It was tannins, Sam said. In wine, there.
I know what tannins are. I thought that kind of cancer was caused by HPV.
His tumor tested negative, Sam offered. I can send you the research.
Don't,
Charlie said.
I believe you.
Sam wasn't sure she quite believed herself anymore. Her druthers was always to apply logic to a problem. But, as with the weather, life existed in a delicate, dynamical balance between the fields of mass and motion. In essence, sometimes shit happened. She told Charlie, I want to go to the funeral home with you, but I don't think I can stay. I don't want to see the people who will come, the hypocrites, the sightseers, people who would cross the street when they saw Dad coming and never, ever understood that he was trying to do good.
He didn't want a service, Charlie said.
Not a formal one. There's a visitation, and then he wanted everybody to head over to Shady Rays. Sam had forgotten about her father's favorite bar.
I can't sit around listening to a bunch of old drunks regaling each other with courthouse stories.
That was one of his favorite things to do. Charlie leaned against the counter. She looked down at her feet. There was a hole in her sock. Sam could see her big toe sticking out. Charlie said,
We talked about his funeral the last time, before the open-heart surgery, just me and Dad.
That's when he made all of these plans.
He said he wanted people to be happy, to celebrate life.
It sounded nice, right?
But now that I'm in the middle of it, all I can think is what a stupid asshole he was to assume I would feel like celebrating when he was dead.
She brushed away tears.
I can't decide if I'm in shock or if what I'm feeling is normal.
Sam could offer no expertise. Anton had been a scientist from a culture that did not romanticize death. Sam had stood by the furnace and watched his wooden coffin slide into the flames.
Charlie said, I remember going to Gamma's funeral. That was shock. It was so unexpected. And I was terrified that Zachariah would get out, that he would come back for me, that his family would do something, that you would die, that they would kill you. I don't think I let go of Lenore's hand the entire time.
Sam had still been in the hospital when her mother was buried. She was certain Charlie had told her about the funeral, just as she was certain that her brain had not been able to retain the information.
Charlie said, Dad was good that day. Present. He kept making sure I was okay, catching my eye, interrupting when the wrong person said the wrong thing. It was kind of like you said, some hypocrites, some sightseers. But there were other people, like Mrs. Kimball from across the street and Mr. Edwards from the real estate office. They told these stories, like strange things Gamma had said or how she had known how to solve a weird problem. And it was really nice to see that other part of her. The adult part of her. She never fit in.
Every place always has somebody who doesn't fit in. That's what makes them fit in.
Charlie looked at the clock. We should get ready. The faster we can do this, the faster it'll be over.
I can stay. Sam sensed her wariness. For the funeral, I can stay if
nothing has changed, Sam.
Charlie did her half shrug. I still need to figure out what I'm going to do with my wasted, unhappy life.
and you still need to leave.
Chapter 15. Sam watched Charlie pace around the front lobby of the funeral home. The building was modern on the outside, but the inside was decorated more in the style of a fussy old woman. They seemed to operate with the same efficiency. There were two funerals taking place in the chapels on either side of the lobby. Two identical black hearses awaited their passengers outside. Sam recalled the funeral home's logo from a billboard she had passed on the way into Pikeville. The ad showed a happy-go-lucky-looking teen beside the ominous words, "Slow down. We don't need the business." Charlie passed by Sam, arm swinging, mouth set. She was wearing a black dress and heels. Her hair was pulled back. She had worn no makeup, done nothing to cover her grief. She mumbled under her breath. Who ever heard of waiting in line at a damn funeral home? Sam knew that her sister was not looking for an answer. They had been asked to wait less than 10 minutes ago. Competing music came from behind closed doors on opposite sides. One service seemed to be winding down while the other started. They would soon be overcome with mourners. "Unbelievable," Charlie muttered, pacing past her again. Sam felt her phone buzz. She looked down at the screen. Before leaving Charlie's, she had texted Stanislav, asking him to meet her at the farmhouse. The driver had been well compensated for each trip, but she still read a curt tone in his reply. "Will return ASAP." The ASAP threw her. Sam was suddenly possessed by the desire to tell him to take his time. She had arrived in Dickerson County wanting nothing more than to leave. But now that she was here, she found herself overcome by inertia. Or perhaps obstinance was a better choice of word. The more Charlie told her to leave, the more rooted Sam felt to this cursed place. A side door opened. Sam had assumed the room was a closet, but the older gentleman in a suit and tie came out drying his hands on a paper towel. He leaned back in and threw the towel in the trash. "Edgar Graham." He shook Sam's hand first, then Charlie's. "I'm sorry that we kept you waiting." Charlie said, "We've been here almost 20 minutes. "Again, my apologies." Edgar indicated the hall. "Ladies, this way, please." Sam took the lead. Her leg was cooperating today, just a tinge of pain reminding her that the detente was likely temporary. She heard Charlie muttering behind her, but the words were too low to make out. Edgar said, "Your husband dropped by with a requested attire this morning." "Ben?" Charlie sounded surprised. "Through here." Edgar stepped ahead of them so that he could hold open the door. The sign said, "Bereavement Counseling." There were 4 club chairs, a coffee table, and boxes of Kleenex discreetly placed behind potted plants around the room. Charlie glared at the sign on the door. Sam could feel a flinty heat coming off of her sister. Usually they fed off each other, whatever emotion Charlie was feeling becoming amplified inside of Sam. Now, Charlie's panic, her anger, served to make Sam calmer. This was what she was here for. She could not solve Charlie's problems, but right now, in this moment, she could give her sister what she needed. Edgar said, "You can make yourself comfortable in here. We've got a full house today. I'm sorry we weren't expecting you." Charlie asked, "You weren't expecting us for our father's funeral?" "Charlie," Sam said, trying to rein her in, "we came unannounced. The funeral doesn't start for another 2 hours. Edgar offered, "We generally open visitation an hour before the service." "We're not having a service," Charlie asked. "Whose funeral's in the other chapel? Is it Mr. Pinkman?" "No, ma'am." Edgar had stopped smiling, but he appeared unruffled. "Douglas Pinkman's service is scheduled for tomorrow. We have Lucy Alexander the following day." Sam felt unexpectedly relieved. She had been so focused on Rusty that she had not remembered
that there were two more bodies that would require burial.
Edgar indicated a chair to Sam, but she did not sit. He said,
"Currently your father is downstairs. When the service in our memory chapel is completed, we'll bring him upstairs and place him on the podium at the front of the room. I want to assure you that..."
"I want to see him now," Charlie said.
"He's not prepared."
"Did he forget to study for a test?"
Sam rested her hand on Charlie's shoulder.
Edgar said, "I apologize that my meaning was unclear." He kept his hands on the back of the chair, his preternatural coolness intact.
He explained, "Your father has been placed in the casket that he chose, but we need to move him to the podium, set up the flowers, prepare the room. You want the first time to see him to be..."
"That's not necessary." Sam squeezed Charlie's shoulder to keep her silent. She knew what her sister was thinking. "Don't tell me what I want."
She said, "I'm sure you've got something lovely planned, but we'd like to see him now."
Edgar gave a smooth nod.
"Of course, ladies. Of course. Please allow me a moment."
Charlie didn't wait for the door to close behind him.
"What a condescending prick."
"Charlie,
the worst thing you could say right now is that I sound like Mother. Jesus."
She pulled at the neck of her dress.
"It feels like it's 100 degrees in here."
"Charlie, this is grief. You want to control things because you feel out of control."
Sam worked to take the lecture out of her tone.
"You need to learn how to deal with this because what you are feeling is not going to stop after today."
"You need," Charlie repeated.
She took a tissue from the box beside the chair. She mopped sweat from her brow.
"You'd think with all of these dead people, they'd keep the air down low."
She paced the small room. She kept moving her hands, shaking her head, as if she was having some kind of private conversation with herself. Sam sat in the chair. This was her chickens coming home to roost, watching her sister's manic, frantic energy manifest itself in rage. Charlie was right that she sounded like their mother. Gamma had always struck out when she felt threatened, the same way that Sam had, the same way that Charlie was doing now. Sam offered, "I have some Valium in my purse."
"You should take it."
Sam tried again.
"Where's Lenore?"
"So she can calm me down?"
Charlie walked over to the window. She bent open the metal blinds to look out at the parking lot.
"She won't come to this. She'd want to kill everybody here. What do you use on your neck?"
Sam touched her fingers to her neck.
"What?"
"I remember Gamma's neck was getting crepey, like the skin was starting to wrinkle, even though she was only 3 years older than I am now."
Sam did not know what to do but carry on the conversation.
"She was out in the sun all of the time. She never used sunscreen. None of her generation did."
"Don't you worry about it? I mean, you're fine now, but..."
Charlie looked in the mirror by the window. She pulled at the skin of her neck.
"I put lotion on it every night, but I think I need to get a cream."
Sam opened her purse. The first thing she saw was the note she had given Rusty. The odor of cigarette smoke lingered on the paper. Sam resisted doing something melodramatic, like holding the note to her face so she could remember what her father smelled like. She found her hand cream beside Ben's USB drive.
"Here."
Charlie looked at the label.
"What's this?"
"It's what I use."
"But it says 4 hands.
"We can Google something." Sam reached for her phone. "What do you think?"
"I think..." Charlie took a short breath. "I think I'm losing my shit."
"It's more likely you're having a panic attack."
"I'm not panicking,"
Charlie said, but the tremble in her voice indicated otherwise.
"I feel dizzy, shaky. I might throw up. Is that a panic attack?"
"Yes." Sam helped her sit down in the chair. "Take some deep breaths."
"Jesus."
She put her head down between her knees.
"Oh, Jesus."
Sam rubbed her sister's back. She tried to think of something that would take away the pain, but grief defied logic.
I didn't believe he would die.
Charlie grabbed her hair in her hands.
I mean, I knew it would happen, but I didn't think it would.
Like the opposite of when you buy a lottery ticket, you're saying, of course I'm not going to win, but then you actually do think you might win, because why else would you buy the damn ticket?
Sam kept rubbing her back.
I know I still have Lenore, but Dad was...
Charlie sat up. She took a jittery breath.
I always knew that no matter what, if I had a problem, I could take it to him, and he wouldn't judge me, and he would make a joke about it so it didn't hurt so much, and then we would figure out how to solve it together.
She covered her face with her hands.
I hate him for not taking care of himself, and I love him for living his life on his own terms.
Sam was familiar with both sensations.
I didn't know that Ben brought his clothes.
She turned to Sam, alarmed.
What if he asked to be dressed up like a clown?
Charlie, don't be silly. You know he would have chosen something from the Renaissance.
The door opened. Charlie stood up. Edgar said,
Our memory chapel is clearing out. If you would give me another moment, I could place your father in a more natural setting.
He's dead, Charlie said. None of this is natural.
Very well.
Edgar tucked down his chin.
We've temporarily placed him in our showroom. I've put out 2 chairs for your comfort and reflection.
Thank you. Sam turned to Charlie, expecting her to complain about the chairs or make a sharp comment about reflection. Instead, she found her sister crying.
I'm here, Sam said, though she did not know if that was a comfort.
Charlie bit her lip. Her hands were still clenched into fists. She was trembling. Sam peeled open Charlie's fingers and held on to her hand. She nodded to Edgar. He walked to the other side of the small room. Sam had not noticed a discreet door built into the wood paneling. He turned the latch, and she saw the brightly lit showroom. Charlie would not move on her own, so Sam gently led her toward the door. Though Edgar had called this the showroom, Sam had not been expecting to find an actual showroom. Shiny caskets painted in dark earth tones lined the walls. They were tilted at a 15-degree angle. Their lids opened to display the silk liners. Spotlights illuminated silver and gold handles. An assortment of pillows was in a spinning rack. Sam wondered if mourners checked the softness before making their decision. Charlie was unsteady on her high heels.
Is this what it was like when you're...
No, Sam said. Anton was cremated. They put him in a pine box.
Why didn't Daddy do that?
Charlie looked down at a jet-black display casket with black satin lining.
I feel like we're in a Shirley Jackson story.
Sam turned, remembering Edgar. She mouthed the words, Thank you. He bowed out of the room, closing the door behind him. Sam looked back at Charlie. She had come to a standstill. All of her bluster was gone. She was staring at the front of the room. 2 folding chairs draped in pastel blue satin covers. A white casket with gold handles on a stainless steel cart with big, black wheels. The lid was open. Rusty's head was tilted up on a pillow. Sam could see the peppered gray of his hair, the tip of his nose, and a flash of bright blue from his suit. Charlie said,
That's Dad.
Sam reached for her sister's hand again, but Charlie was already moving toward their father. Her deliberate stride tapered off quickly. She stuttered to a stop. Her hand went to her mouth. Her shoulders began to shake. She told Sam,
It's not him.
Sam understood what she meant. This was clearly their father. But just as clearly it was not. Rusty's cheeks were too red. His wild eyebrows had been tamed. His hair, normally sticking up in every direction, was combed into something resembling a pompadour. Charlie said,
He promised me he would look handsome.
Sam wrapped her arm around Charlie's waist.
When we talked about it, I told him I didn't want an open casket, and he promised me that he would look handsome, that I would want to see how good he looked,
she told Sam.
He doesn't look good.
No, Sam said. He doesn't look like himself. They stared down at their father. Sam could not remember a time that she had not seen Rusty in motion, lighting a cigarette, throwing out a dramatic hand, tapping his toes, snapping his fingers, nodding his head as he hummed or clicked his tongue or whistled a tune that she did not recognize, yet could not get out of her brain. Charlie said,
I don't want anyone to see him like this.
She reached up to close the lid. Sam gave a hushed, Charlie. She pulled on the lid. The lid did not move.
Help me close it. We can get... I don't want that creepy asshole back in here.
Charlie pulled with both hands. The lid moved perhaps 5 degrees before it stopped.
Help me.
I'm not going to help you.
What was your list? You can't see, you can't run, you can't process. I don't recall you saying your useless body couldn't help close the fucking lid on your own father's coffin.
It's a casket. Coffins are tapered at the head and the foot.
For fuck's sake!
Charlie dropped her purse on the floor. She kicked off her shoes. She used both hands to pull down on the lid, practically hanging from it. There was a creak of protest, but the casket remained open. Sam said, It won't simply close. That would be a safety hazard.
You mean it could kill him if the lid slammed shut?
I mean it could hit you in the head or break your fingers. She leaned over Rusty to examine the brass barrel hinges. A cloth-covered strap and loop assembly kept the lid from over-opening, but no apparent mechanism controlled the closing. There must be some kind of release.
Jesus Christ!
Charlie hung from the lid again.
Can't you just help me?
I am trying.
I'll do it myself.
Charlie walked around to the back of the casket. She pushed from behind. The table moved. One of the front wheels was unlocked. Charlie pushed harder. The table moved again. Hold on. Sam checked the exterior of the casket for some kind of lever or button. You're going to... Charlie jumped up, pushing down on the lid with all of her weight. Sam said,
You're going to knock it off the table.
Good. Charlie pushed again. Nothing moved. She banged her palm against the lid.
Fuck!
She banged it again, this time with her closed fist.
Fuck, fuck, fuck!
Sam ran her fingers inside the edge of the silk liner. She found a button. There was a loud click. The pneumatic pump hissed as the lid slowly closed.
Shit!
Charlie was breathless. She leaned her hands on the closed casket. She closed her eyes. She shook her head.
He leaves us with a metaphor.
Sam sat down in the chair.
You're not going to say anything?
I'm reflecting. Charlie's laugh was cut off by a sob. Her shoulders trembled as she cried. Her tears fell onto the top of the casket. Sam watched them roll down the side, bend around the stainless steel table, then drop onto the floor.
Shit.
Charlie said, using the back of her hand to wipe her nose. She found a box of tissues behind the handle display. She blew her nose. She dried her eyes. She sat down heavily in the chair beside Sam. They both looked at the casket. The gaudy gold handles and filigree corner guards. The bright white paint had a sparkling finish, as if glitter had been mixed into the clear coat. Charlie said,
I can't believe how ugly that thing is.
She threw away the used tissue. She snagged another from the box.
It looks like something Elvis was buried in.
Do you remember when we went to Graceland?
That white Cadillac?
Rusty had charmed the attendant into letting them sit behind the wheel. The paint on the Fleetwood had been the same bright white as the casket. Diamond dust had brought out the sparkle.
Dad could talk anybody into letting him do anything.
Charlie wiped her nose again. She sat back in the chair. Her arms were crossed. Sam could hear a clock ticking somewhere, a kind of metronome that synced with the beating of her heart. Her fingers still held the memory of the tap-tap-tap of Rusty's blood rushing through his veins. She had spent 2 days begging Charlie to unburden herself, but her own sins weighed far heavier. Sam said, "I couldn't let him die. My husband, I couldn't let him go." Charlie silently worked the tissue in her fingers. "He had a DNR, but I didn't give it to the hospital." Sam tried to take a deep breath. She felt the weight of Anton's death restricting her chest. He couldn't speak for himself. He couldn't move. He could only see and hear, and what he saw and heard was his wife refusing to let the doctors turn off the machines that were extending his suffering. Sam felt the shame boiling in her stomach like oil. The tumors had spread to his brain. There's only so much volume inside the skull. The pressure was pushing his brain down into his spine. The pain was excruciating. They had him on morphine, then fentanyl, and I would sit there by his bed and watch the tears roll from his eyes, and I could not let him go. Charlie kept working the tissue, wrapping it around her finger. "I would have done the same thing here. I could have told you that from New York. I was the wrong person to ask. I couldn't put my own needs, my desperation, aside for the only man I have ever loved. I certainly could not have done the right thing by Dad." Charlie started to pull apart the layers of tissue. The clock kept ticking. Time kept moving forward. Charlie said, "I wanted you here because I wanted you here." Sam had not meant to stir up Charlie's guilt. "Please don't try to make me feel better."
"I'm not," Charlie said. "I hate that I made you come here, that I've put you through this."
"You didn't force me to do anything."
"I knew that you would come if I asked. I've known that for the last 20 years, and I used Dad as an excuse because I couldn't take it anymore."
"Couldn't take what?"
Charlie wadded the tissue into a ball. She held it tight in her hands. "I had a miscarriage in college."
Sam remembered the hostile phone call from all those years ago, Charlie's angry demand for money.
Charlie said, "I was so relieved when it happened." "You don't realize when you're that young that you're going to get older, that there's going to come a time when you're not relieved."
Sam felt her eyes start to water at the piercing undertone of anguish in her sister's words.
Charlie said, "The second miscarriage was worse. Ben thinks it was the first, but it was the second."
She shrugged off the deception.
"I was at the end of my first trimester. I was in court, and I felt this pain, like cramps. I had to wait another hour for the judge to call a recess. I ran to the bathroom, and I sat down, and I had this feeling of blood rushing out of my body."
She stopped to swallow.
"I looked in the toilet, and it was nothing. It didn't look like anything. A really bad period. A glob of something. But it didn't feel right to flush it. I couldn't leave it. I crawled out from under the stall so I could leave the door locked. I called Ben. I was crying so hard he couldn't understand what I was saying."
"Charlie," Sam whispered. Charlie shook her head, because there was more.
"The third time, which Ben thinks was the second time, was worse. I was at 18 weeks. We were outside raking leaves in the yard. We had already started to put together the nursery, you know. Painted the walls. Looked at cribs. I felt the same kind of cramping. I told Ben I was going to get some water. That I barely made it to the bathroom. It just came out of me. Like my body couldn't wait to get rid of it.
She used the tips of her fingers to brush away tears.
I told myself it was never going to happen again. That I wasn't going to risk it. But then it happened again.
Sam reached over. She held tight to her sister's hand.
This was 3 years ago. I stopped taking my birth control. It was stupid. I didn't tell Ben, which made it worse because I was tricking him. I was pregnant in a month. And then another month passed. And then I hit the 3-month mark. And then it was 6 months. 7. And we were so fucking excited. Dad was walking on air. Lenore kept giving hints about names.
Charlie pressed her fingers to her eyelids. Tears streamed down.
There's this thing called Dandy Walker Syndrome. It sounds so stupid, like an old-timey dance. But basically, it's a group of congenital brain malformations.
Sam felt an ache inside her heart.
They told us late on a Friday. Ben and I spent the whole weekend reading about it on the internet. There'd be this one great story about a kid who was smiling, living his life, blowing out the candles on his birthday cake. And we'd say, okay, well, that's fantastic. That's a gift. We can do that. And then there'd be another story about a baby who was blind and deaf, and had open-heart surgery and brain surgery and died before his first birthday. And we'd just hold each other and cry.
Sam squeezed Charlie's hand.
We decided that we couldn't give up. It's our baby, right? So we went to see a specialist at Vanderbilt. He did some scans. And then he took us into this room. There weren't any pictures on the wall. That's what I remember. The rest of the place had babies everywhere. Photos of families. But not in this room.
Charlie stopped to dry her eyes again. Sam waited. Charlie said,
"The doctor told us that there was nothing we could do. The cerebrospinal fluid was leaking. The baby didn't have organs."
She took a shaky breath.
"My blood pressure was high. They were worried about sepsis. The doctor gave us 5 days, maybe a week, before the baby died, or I died. And I couldn't wait. I couldn't go to work and eat dinner and watch TV knowing that..."
She clasped Sam's hand.
"So we decided to go to Colorado. That's the only place we could find where it's legal."
Sam knew she was talking about abortion.
"It's 25 grand, plus flights, plus the hotel room, plus taking off work. We didn't have time to take out a loan, and we didn't want anyone to know what we were using it for. We sold Ben's car. Dad and Lenore gave us money. We put the rest on credit cards."
Sam felt a crushing sense of shame.
She should have been there.
She could have given them the money. Flown with Charlie on the plane.
The night before we were supposed to leave, I took a sleeping pill because what did it matter, right? But I woke up with this burning pain. It wasn't like before with the cramps. I felt like I was being ripped apart. I went downstairs so I wouldn't wake up Ben. I started throwing up. I couldn't make it to the bathroom. There was so much blood. It looked like a crime scene. And there were pieces I could see. Pieces of...
Charlie shook her head, unable to say the rest.
"Ben called an ambulance. I've got a scar, like a C-section,
had no baby to show for it. And when I finally came home, the rug was gone. Ben had cleaned up everything. It was like it had never happened.
Sam thought about the bare floor in Charlie's living room. They had not replaced the rug in 3 years. She asked, "Did you talk to Ben about it?"
"Yeah, we talked about it. We went to therapy. We got past it."
Sam could not believe that was true. Charlie said,
"It was my fault. I never told Ben, but every time, it was my fault."
"You can't believe that." She used the back of her hand to rub her eyes.
"I saw Dad do this closing argument once. He talked about how people always obsess about lies. Damn lies. But no one really understands that the real danger is the truth."
She looked up at the white casket.
"The truth can rot you from the inside. It doesn't leave room for anything else."
Sam tried. "There's no truth in blaming yourself. Nature has its own design."
"That's not the truth I'm talking about."
"Then tell me, Charlie, what's the truth?" Charlie leaned over. She put her head in her hands. "Please," Sam pleaded. She couldn't stand her own uselessness. "Tell me." Charlie inhaled deeply, drawing air between the gap in her hands.
"Everybody thinks I blame myself for running away."
"Don't you?"
"No," she said. "I blame myself for not running faster."
What really happened to Charlie?
"Run!"
Sam shoved her away.
"Charlie, go!"
Charlie fell back onto the ground. She saw the bright flash of the gun firing, heard the sudden explosion of the bullet leaving the barrel. Sam spun through the air, almost somersaulting into the gaping mouth of the grave.
"Shit," Daniel said. "Christ! Jesus Christ!"
Charlie scrambled away, crab-like on her hands and knees, until her back hit a tree. She pushed herself up, her knees shook, her hands shook, her whole body was shaking.
"It's okay, sweet pea," Zack told Charlie. "Stay right there for me."
Charlie stared at the grave. Maybe Sam was hiding, waiting to spring up and run. But she wasn't springing up. She wasn't moving, or talking, or shouting, or bossing everybody around. Zack told Daniel,
"You cover this bitch up. Let me take the little one off for a minute."
If Sam could talk right now, she would be yelling, furious at Charlie for just standing there, for blowing this chance, for not doing what Sam always told her to do. "Don't look back. Trust me to be there. Keep your head down," and Charlie ran. Her arms flailed, her bare feet struggled for purchase. Tree limbs slashed at her face. She couldn't breathe. Her lungs felt like needles were stabbing into her chest. She heard Sam's voice. "Breathe through it. Slow and steady. Wait for the pain to pass."
"Get back here!"
Zack yelled. The air shook with a steady thud, thud, thud that started to vibrate inside of Charlie's chest. Zachariah Culpepper was coming after her. She tucked her arms into her sides. She forced the tension from her shoulders. She imagined her legs were pistons in a machine. She tuned out the pine cones and sharp rocks gouging into her bare feet. She thought about the muscles that were helping her move. Calves, quads, hamstrings, tighten your core, protect your back. Zack was getting closer. She could hear him like a steam engine bearing down. Charlie vaulted over a fallen tree. She scanned left, then right, knowing she shouldn't run in a straight line. She needed to locate the weather tower to make sure she was heading in the right direction, but she knew if she looked back she would see Zack, and that seeing him would make her panic even more, and if she panicked even more, she would stumble, and if she stumbled she would fall, and then he would rape her. Charlie veered right, her toes gripping the dirt as she altered direction. At the last minute, she saw another fallen tree. She flung herself over it, landing awkwardly. Her foot twisted,
She felt her ankle bone touch earth. Pain sliced up her leg. She kept running. Her feet were sticky with blood. Sweat dripped down her body. She scanned